Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian, former NFL scout and now of Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. As always, we've got our producer, Justin Stein, with us. And today's episode is all about how football stats and analytics are represented on TV. And a look into the state of that, we have our very special guest, Evan Kaplan. Evan is a research specialist at ESPN Stats and Info, including serving as the primary researcher on a couple of shows you might have heard of, Sunday NFL Countdown, Monday Night Countdown, and ESPN's draft coverage. You can follow him on Twitter at EPKAP, E-P-K-A-P. But he's with us right now. And before we get into kind of analytics on TV, we're going to pick up right where we left off last week and talk more about this kind of Cam Newton fallout. Now that it looks like Cam Newton's going to the Patriots. Evan, welcome to the show. What's up? And let's start there. What do you expect from Cam this year?
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me, guys. I love what both you guys do, so really looking forward to talking some football for the next few minutes here. Yeah, there's so many layers to him going to New England, right? It's so fascinating from him potentially being the first QB to start for them after the Brady era, looking at you know how much he's struggled lately with some of his injuries, to knowing that he still won an MVP in 2015. It's not that long ago. You know, he's one of the best dual threats we've ever seen at quarterback in NFL history. Most games ever with a touchdown pass and a rushing touchdown. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits into what Josh McDaniels wants to do. I think that one of the things that I've kind of come across and looking into Cam is Cam's a great running quarterback. But Cam does not run to throw. He's statistically one of the worst quarterbacks throwing on the run if you look over the last 4 years. And he does the majority of his damage from inside the pocket. You look at that last eight-game stretch when the Panthers went 6-2 before his shoulder injury really took over in the 2018 season. He was completing 67% of his passes. His average pass was only about 7 yards downfield, but 96% of those attempts were from inside the pocket. So if you project that to what he could potentially bring to New England, maybe he can survive and thrive in that quick, short passing game that the Patriots always use.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there in terms of the throwing on the run and being a guy. You know, we always talk about eye discipline as scouts, keeping your eyes down the field, and what you were talking about, running to throw. And I think of Donovan McNabb as being the guy that I think back at almost being better when he was moving than when he was stationary in terms of how good he was. And I think you're right. What comes to mind with Cam is the overthrows and that sort of thing. I was really interested because Alex Vigderman wrote a piece that went up on Sports Info Solutions blog where he talked about how over the past couple of years, Cam really hasn't even been that efficient a runner. In three of the last 4 years, he actually had negative total points in terms of the running game as quarterback. Now, big part of that is fumbles, but another part of that, I think, is understanding, you know, that there were injuries and how is that going to look going forward? Because Alex made the case that he's not an efficient runner. Patriots fans shouldn't expect that he's going to come in there and all of a sudden they're going to have this great running quarterback. At the same time, I go back to what you were saying about Josh McDaniels and how he ends up fitting in, because I think of McDaniels and what he was able to do with Tebow and things like that. In that position. So I wonder if maybe Cam isn't that efficient a runner, but just the volume that you'll get out of having Cam Newton back there can open up more efficiencies in other parts of the game.
Some of that is, I think that he's not a scrambler. So he's not going to convert your third and longs with scrambling. When Cam Newton runs, for the most part, it's a planned run. But I think to see what the Patriots are going to do with him, go back to Jacoby Brissett's first start during the Tom Brady suspension. They played Houston, and they basically ran the Carolina playbook from Madden. Like, it was all kinds of read options and stuff that the Patriots never use. But, like, they've got all that stuff ready for a quarterback that can run that stuff, and now they have a quarterback that can run that stuff. The other thing I think is interesting about this move is, considering the difficulty of learning new offenses in the COVID offseason, the fact that Norv Turner uses Earhart Perkins language in his offense, and that's what Cam's been in the last couple of years, and the Patriots use the same language in their offense, is a real positive because he's not, it's not like he's going to have to learn new language. Like Brady going to Tampa Bay has to learn new language because Arians doesn't come from the same offensive tree as the Patriots do. But North Turner and Josh McDaniels / Belichick come from the same offensive tree.
That's really funny because you think of North Turner and you think of it as like get the ball all the way down the field, you know, 7-step drops and stuff like that. And you think of McDaniels and Brady and get the ball out quick.
Yeah. The way the plays are called is similar.
Well, it's football is football. There's only so much you can do at the end of the day, right?
Based on the contract and everything involved with what you guys and what we just talked about, do you guys see him being their starter? I mean, because that's still been a debate, right? I mean, some people say, all right, it's Cam's job, but others have said, look, they love Stidham. I know our Diana Rossini said that on Get Up yesterday morning.
Yeah, I don't know. She was quoting a coach from the AFC East, right. And everyone was like, oh, that was probably Adam Gase, because I just can't imagine if Cam Newton is healthy, I can't imagine why you would take a fourth-round pick with no experience who didn't have great college stats. I mean, the thing about Tom Brady is that finding someone like Tom Brady in the sixth round is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Lightning does not usually strike twice. And I think your odds would be much higher going with Cam Newton. I know that he improved the Patriots. In our projection system, they went from like 19th to 9th or something when we replaced Stidham with Newton as the quarterback.
Wow. So it's like a couple of wins there of value.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly on Aaron's point, from 2005 to 2019, there were 20 quarterbacks drafted in the fourth round. Three of them have started double-digit games in the NFL. 3 out of 20. So it's not a high percentage that you're drafted in that round and you end up being a starter for a long time in the league.
Yeah, the more people I talk to coming out of New England, the more I get the sense that they were never really that sold on Stidham. I mean, who gets pulled in a loss or in a blowout win, rather, the way that he did?
When Greg Bedard was on with us a couple of weeks ago, what he said was they were sort of – that's what they were left with because of the cap. It's not that they went into this offseason like, how do we build this team around Jarrett Stidham? What Greg said was when Brady didn't come back, that was their first choice. And when Brady didn't come back, they were like, all right, we're going with Stidham, I guess.
It's just so crazy how there's literally like no risk to this Cam signing. They're literally getting him in at the minimum – and that's all they're risking there. And partially because of that, they don't have to worry. Cam's got to worry about his health. They don't have to worry about his health down the road. So I think he plays, and I think the Patriots go as far offensively as probably he can take them. I think that's the game plan now. I think you look at the Bills and you look at the Patriots, and they're really similar teams all of a sudden. They have similar quarterbacks for sure in terms of their skill sets. Limited outside of that on offense, a lot of unproven parts, and built around defense. So there's that Spider-Man meme again.
Yeah, the Bills are better outside of their quarterback on offense, but if Cam's healthy, I'd rather have Cam than Josh Allen.
How Patriots would it be for them? They lose Brady, Cam comes in, they win 11 games, they win a 12th straight AFC East title, and they don't miss a beat. We'll see what happens, but it like I said, when you guys first asked, it makes things very interesting, the fact that he's in New England now.
Yeah, you want to talk about how we use advanced stats on TV. The first thing to talk about is how excited TV is about this signing, because yes. The Patriots just became way more interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. Cam Newton sells a lot more than Jarrett Stidham, I'll tell you that much.
So that's a good transition to talk a little bit about Evan and understand a little bit more about what his job is. Of course, we were connected by Mark Simon, who used to work at ESPN, now at SIS. You have a unique job and expertise. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you mentioned off the top, I'm a researcher for Sunday NFL Countdown, Monday Night Countdown, and then the draft. So a little bit of quick background on me. I started as a part-timer in our stats and analysis department, does a lot of kind of the nitty-gritty in terms of our video analysis of games. And then I moved over to research about 5 years ago, and I've been with these shows kind of ever since. So a lot of what I'm doing is working hand-in-hand with our producers, working hand-in-hand with our talent, coming up with what we call a rundown for TV, and then talking about what we're going to discuss in individual segments. So I'm working, and then whether it's email, we have calls with our analysts throughout the week leading up to Sunday and Monday. So what are the topics they want to hit on? And then what can I do from an analytics, from a statistical, historical perspective to add context to that? You know, I'm also working constantly with our host, Sam Ponder on Sunday, Susie Culver on Monday. So I'm pitching what I think is the best content to get on the show. And then based on what they want to talk about in terms of breakdowns, X and O's, what they're seeing as guys who played in the league for years or coached in the league in Rex Ryan's case. And then the real sweet spot is when we can marry those two things together. And I provide the analytical context with what they're seeing on tape.
So it sounds a little bit like working for a team in a sort of research role where a lot of the times you're trying to carve out time in your schedule to get the best research done, what you really find the most interesting, kind of pitch that stuff to whether it's the coaches or the personnel staff. But then also, of course, you're getting stuff kind of downstream from them where it's, hey, I want to look into this. Hey, what do you have on this? So I'm curious for you, because I know that's a big balancing act that goes on at a lot of teams. It goes on at SIS. In terms of what we see on air, how much of that comes from kind of an organic idea that you had versus an idea that the hosts might have that they want you to look into?
Yeah, it's a pretty good split. I think a lot of time, so Sunday night, I'm already looking forward to the next week. Like you mentioned, it's kind of like a teamwork, right? There's always advanced scouting and we're kind of doing the same thing, looking ahead to that next week's games. And there's a lot of things that I pitch that end up on the shows, but sometimes it's what the analyst wants to talk about. And then I'm kind of able to weave in what the best angles are to complement what they want to see on the show. So I try and give them as much information as possible. And then, and a lot of times it works that way. Sometimes they'll see things that they didn't realize and they'll say, all right, we should really hit on that. That was great. That was in Evan's packet in the middle of the week. It works the reverse as well, where they'll see something that then I'm able to dig into. You know what? I didn't think of that angle. And then now we're able to get that on.
How do you balance serving both the diehard fans and the casual fans at the same time? Because there's like, you know, people who understand QBR and where it comes from and what it means. And there's people who still aren't even used to passer rating. And how do you balance that?
It's tough. And it's something that we talk about, or I talk about with my producers every week, because we want to make our fans smarter without doing something so complex that we're turning off the more casual viewer. You know, I think in general, football fans are becoming more knowledgeable about the game, and there's so much information out there. It's almost like, I mean, think about a bunch of college kids in a group chat that they're trying to one up each other with stats they saw on Football Outsiders or SIS or ESPN, whatever platform it is. But I think that it's the challenge for us is to present the information in a simple enough fashion where we're trying to serve both of those buckets, right? And it's something where the more often we present something and kind of try and make it clear and use that real estate we have to really explain a metric or a stat, eventually it becomes commonplace. So Aaron, you brought up total QBR. And I remember 5-7 years ago, we would explain it almost every time. It's a 0 to 100 scale. We've come up with it as an alternative to passer rating, everything like that. And eventually, I think we felt as a department, as a company, it got to a point where it became common enough where the majority of fans understood it. Like you said, I don't think everybody still understands it, but I think that's where we want to get to a sweet spot with a lot of what we're explaining. So like an example I'll bring up from last year. So our analytics team developed a new metric, pass rush win rate, which was how often a pass rusher was beating their blocker within 2.5 seconds. So when we did an entire segment on that on Sunday Countdown last year, and rather than list, let's say, the top 5 or the top 10, we really owned in on one number. So Khalil Mack was, they were playing, I think I forget who the Bears were playing, but Khalil Mack was third in the NFL that week, or third in the NFL at that point in the season. So we really just focused on him. So he was third in the NFL. He was beating his blocks in 2.5 seconds, 32% of the time. So we presented that. Sam explained what the stat was. And then we went as far as Teddy being able to show the shoulder pads and the fact that the next-gen chips are in there, and that's how we're able to track the data and all that. So the luxury that I have on Countdown is that we have the real estate to do that. Every ESPN show doesn't have that time. Because, that, I mean, you think about how much time that takes. So to kind of go back to your question, Aaron, it's a balancing act. And I think that we want to make our show smarter and we don't want to kind of dumb things down. So the challenge is doing that while also making it simple enough where the casual viewer who's just looking to improve their fantasy team and throws on Sunday Countdown for a few hours on Sunday morning when they're making breakfast, whatever, they can still understand what we're doing.
Yeah. So along those lines, I wonder, you mentioned pass rush win rate. What about something like EPA? EPA is pretty foundational at this point to almost every football analytics source of analysis that's out there. I don't think I've seen much talk of EPA on broadcasts or in. Is that the sort of thing that you guys could see becoming more commonplace in the years coming forward? Or is that just there's no appetite for that sort of thing?
No, absolutely. Look, we've tried internally within our group. We've certainly tried to push that. And we've kind of used the word efficiency interchangeably a bit with EPA. We kind of have our efficiency ratings, which certainly are pretty much comprised of EPA. And we've pushed back and just tried to get the yards per game out of what we're doing. You know, even if it's kind of like, even if it's a passive mention on like a topic bar, you know, so a segment on SportsCenter is talking about the Buccaneers defense. And, you know, rather than putting up Buccaneers defense, whatever, seventh, eighth, whatever they were in yards per game, use efficiency, use EPA. So that's certainly one of the big priorities for our group and something that we're going to continue to focus on going forward because, look, I think anybody sit down and explain it to them, they can understand why yards per game is not an accurate stat to use for the effectiveness of an offense or a defense. And I think something else that helps with that is when we have our analysts and our talent kind of saying that as well. I know Dominique Foxworth is a huge proponent of that. So the more analysts we have who not only understand it, but will go on shows and kind of will use it without any kind of prodding or any need for convincing from our group, the better.
How much pushback do you get from the ex-players, especially when an advanced stat will sometimes kick out a result that is different from conventional wisdom? Is it difficult to explain to some of them where that's coming from and how accepting are they? Are they more accepting than they used to be?
Yeah, I think they're more accepting. And I think overall they want to sound smart too, right? Like they want to sound like they know what they're talking about. So yeah, I've had plenty of conversations with a lot of our analysts over the years, and there's things that they might not necessarily understand at first, but things that they might not buy into. And I think the best way to show them some of these things is the ability to combine video with the stats that I'm explaining. And that really gets to really the sweet spot of everything that I do. Because if I have an example, let's say it's the next gen stat completion percentage above expectation, something like that. And if it's something that they don't buy into, but I have examples that kind of show using, okay, well, according to next gen, the expected completion probability on this throw was only 10%. And Russell Wilson, you know, when Tyler Lockett connected on the pass, then it's easier for them to understand because so much, and this goes back to a little bit what Matt talked about with the show kind of working like a team. These guys watch film for, you know, the last 20, 25 years of their life. Like that's what they did when they were playing. So that's what they're used to now. So when I can explain it to them by showing them video examples, the chances of them buying it, not just understanding it, the chances of them buying into it increase exponentially.
Man, when you talk about that, I think I know which throw you're talking about from Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett. And 10% might be generous. That was seemed like about a 1 in 1,000 type of play.
I think I was just using that example. I want to say it was 6%.
Yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying there in terms of, I think it's the same way, again, going back to the teams, when you can put the film to it and kind of say, here's what I'm trying to show you in numbers, and here it is on film, what's happening there. You can sometimes get buy-in, but you can sometimes get into trouble. So I think a couple years ago, Mitch Trubisky famously was third in QBR, and everybody looked at that and kind of puzzled by it. I think underlying it, he had some better performance than people realized that year, especially running and the impact that running can have on a stat like that. But at the same time, I'm sure that people must have turned their heads and said, hey, what's the deal with that? So what are those conversations like when there is an analyst that's kind of taking the Charles Barkley type of attitude towards analytics? How do you handle that?
Yeah, and it happens a decent amount, probably more than I would like to admit. But, I mean, it's something where I think that we're using numbers to kind of back up what I'm saying, right? It's not going to be making these things up. So sometimes, honestly, the best television is when what the analytics say goes against what the analyst wants to talk about. And in those cases, I'll arm Sam and I'll arm Susie with all the numbers. And let's say Rex or Randy or Matt or Lewis, I don't want to single anyone out, so I'll just name all the analysts. if one of them wants to talk about something, and I explain the numbers in our kind of pregame meetings, and they still don't buy into it, and they still want to kind of say their point. Look, they're getting paid for their opinion. I can do everything I can in terms of supplying them with the numbers and the analytics, but at the end of the day, it's what they want to say on TV. So if it's something where the numbers say something different than what they're going to say, I'll give that to Sam and Susie, and they'll kind of go back at them at the end of with the point they're making, and that makes for great TV. You know, at the end of the day, like, we're trying to get more viewers. We want our product to be entertaining as well as informative. And when there's disagreement, a lot of times that can be for the most memorable segments.
That was the whole spirit behind Numbers Never Lie, honestly. When I did that show back in 2011, when I was on ESPN for 1 year, and that was the spirit, was that you got really good discussion and argument when you had an analytics person on one side and a former player or a former coach on the other, and you were arguing about this. I do kind of wish ESPN would put more of the analytics people on to make the analytics case. We need Seth Walder on TV. We need
that. Look, I work very closely with Seth, so I'm all for that. The more exposure for him, the better. I mean, I know having Mina Kimes on NFL Live, I think, is going to be huge. We announced that earlier this week, so having her as kind of a daily voice on that show, which I've worked on a bunch too, is going to be big.
If they won't bring me down from Boston, I'll settle for them putting on Mina all the time. That's fine.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I heard going back and forth with Keyshawn, exactly what you were talking about just a second ago, Evan. And it's cool. I think reflecting on it, a lot of times we can feel in the analytics movement in general, in specifically football analytics, probably specifically in your job, like you're fighting towards this so much, and you're really trying to push towards this kind of progressive way of looking at things, and it can feel slow. But then all of a sudden we look around and we see Mina Kimes and Dominique Foxworth and Seth, you know, getting more and more of a voice over there. And I think it does change more than you realize, kind of, when you pull your head out of the sand for a second.
For sure. And I would add that even some of our main analysts who have played and guys who maybe you wouldn't think on the surface would be into a lot of these analytics, like when they realize kind of, again, if it's something that maybe backs up their point, they're all in for it, you know? So I remember last year, like, Lewis Riddick absolutely loved some of the numbers with Tannehill when he was in his stretch, and he had one of the best completion percentage of CPOE, completion percentage above expectation in the NFL from when he started. And Lewis knew Arthur Smith from when they had worked together previously. So it was the kind of thing where not only did he use it on when he was on Countdown and other shows, but he would argue with people on Twitter about it. It was great. So he had bought all into it. So when you get to that point with something that they buy into, then I just keep feeding them. You know, it was the kind of thing where every week we would use some kind of version of that stat, or maybe there was another throw that Tannehill had the previous week, and we had a lot of success using that with Lewis last year.
We also have more ex-players now who are getting into this, understanding analytics from the beginning of their media career, whether it's someone with ESPN like Dominique Foxworth or someone with, you know, another company like Jeff Schwartz, like people who have both backgrounds. I mean, not necessarily an analytics background, but they are interested in and understand what the analytics people are saying, and they've got the background as athletes.
Yeah, you don't have to be the person running the code in order to have, I think, look at baseball. I'm always constantly looking at baseball because they're ahead of where we're at in football. And now you're seeing the former players who embraced analytics while they played, especially the bilingual ones, who are the hottest managerial candidates because not they can run the formulas, because they can communicate it and explain how it can help you.
You don't have to run the code to make the case.
I like that.
All right, Evan, I'm curious because I watched the coverage of the college football national championship, for example, and I flipped over to the, I forget what it was called, but it was kind of the analytics broadcast. Yep. And I ate that up and loved that. And I'm wondering if, as we move into the future, are there other ways, maybe technology related, maybe otherwise, that kind of help with this, where somebody like me who wants all the information has either the second screen experience or a different experience altogether than my grandmother when she just wants to tune in for a playoff game?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, the MegaCast model that we've used for the college football championship is something that we've explored doing for other broadcasts as well. Whether it's whether it's a Monday night game, perhaps, or the playoff game we have. But yeah, I think that one of the things that we do on Sunday, which I think is kind of speaks to what you're talking about, Matt, is so we have what we call our Mondo bar, which is basically a huge graphics bar that goes across the bottom of basically the lower third of the screen throughout the show. And what I've had success doing is putting a lot of maybe some of your more advanced information on that bar as we're talking about conversation. So when we refer to that kind of in kind of the TV business, it's basically like a passive representation, you know? So maybe Teddy's talking about a point about Aaron Rodgers, and he doesn't come out and mention the analytics or the stat that the graphic's referring to. The graphic does that for itself, you know? So if you're someone who wants to consume that, your eyes kind of go down to the bottom of the screen. And we've done that. We've, from some of the more complex information to, we have kind of rankings that cycle through that bar as well. So look, we're always trying to find other ways to get the most complex information on the air, whether it's within entire segments or whether it's kind of that passive presentation like I talked about. But I think that we're going to continue to push the envelope, and I know that's something that that I work with producers who are always open to doing things that are creative. So there's a finite real estate that we have in a 3-hour, 2-hour show. I know it sounds like a ton of time. It's really not when you break down how many voices we need to get on. But I think it's something where you're going to continue to see more evolved presentations.
If I can ask, what are some of the biggest kind of successes recently that you and your team have had, maybe within the last year or so, things that you guys are really excited about?
We put together, so we have a segment on Sunday Countdown called our film room. So basically on one side of our studio is a huge, huge wall that we can put video in. And it was a segment basically where Matt Hasselbeck and Teddy Bruschi would kind of go back and forth. Sometimes they'd be in agreement, sometimes they'd be in disagreement, where they would each do like a 90-second to 2-minute tape. So we got to the point where it was almost every week where I was pitching content that ended up in those tapes. I know one that sticks out was an Aaron Rodgers tape where Matt wanted to make the point that all the talk about Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers not working together, were early in the season they were working really well together, and Matt thought that LaFleur was scheming the offense up well and Rodgers was able to make relatively easy throws. So what I was able to find using some of our next-gen tools was just the average separation between the receivers and nearest defender when the target arrived. So Matt did an entire tape on that where we had a bunch of fonts that showed on the screen. It showed that, okay, so when Rodgers dropped the ball in, the closest defender was 3.5 yards away, things like that. So that was a success that we really extended throughout the year. And gosh, Rodgers was just to kind of tangent for a little bit here, Rodgers was an interesting case for us last year because a lot of our metrics, QBR, I mean, he was 20th in the NFL. I know that the TD-INT ratio was great, 26-4, but that was one where, like we mentioned before, talking about how sometimes preconceived notions of a player put blinders on in terms of how his performance actually is. I'd be interested to see what you guys felt in terms of Rodgers. Look, he got to the NFC Championship, but he had a weird season, right?
Well, you're going to have an interesting argument here because what's very interesting is the SIS total points, which attempts to do a lot of things similarly to what QBR is trying to do, was the exact opposite. I know our Football Outsider stats, which are more based on just the standard play-by-play, were somewhere in the middle. We had Rodgers like 12th or something.
Okay.
But yes. SIS total points had Rodgers, say it, Matt.
We had him number one in total points, not on a rate basis, but in total accumulated value over the course of the year.
It makes this great, right? I mean, we can have, you know, you can go back and forth and talk about, you know, the different ways and things that contribute to that. So I'm glad I brought it up. There we go.
I don't know whether SIS just determined that the Packers receivers dropped more passes than what the ESPN charters thought, or like it's really interesting.
No, I think that's pretty – I think the drop numbers are pretty in line. I think that what's going on from a total points perspective, I can't speak to QBR specifically, but I think when you look at more typical stats, I think when you look at the way DVOA looks at the Packers offense, they weren't very good. They were kind of middle of the road in terms of what they did throughout the year. And especially in the passing game, they were a little bit weaker. But what total points does that it tries to separate his performance from all of the 10 players on offense with him on the play and the defense on the play as well. And between the fact that total points doesn't hate throwaways, which Aaron Rodgers had in spades last year. He gets rewarded a lot for the drops, helps him a lot too. And also the fact that the receivers weren't separating very well, according to our metrics, so it all kind of boosts into his play a little bit, and the amount of time that he did things under pressure. And then we can get into a whole nother debate about who's responsible for the pressure and how that gets handled by all the different stats. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's certainly interesting because you can look at football stats and just describing what happened in one season so differently, so many different ways.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. And quick one, I just want to mention one other thing in terms of your question about successes. And this kind of speaks to what you guys have done with SIS, Matt, which has really helped us hugely in the draft, right? Especially in the later round, because we've been able to kind of incorporate some of the data that you guys have for college and use that with some of the later round guys. I know the specific example I'll bring up is Bradley and I going to the Cowboys in the fifth round. I'm surprised lasted that long. A lot of our guys are projecting him the third or fourth round. But basically I had come up with something using the SIS data given to Lewis Riddick about how 11 of Anai's 13 sacks came when he was lined up as a right defensive end last year. That was the most in the FBS. So I texted Lewis right when we heard Anai was picked. Lewis did a great job kind of using the stat as we were showing video, and he took it a step further, and this shows how great of an analyst he is, where he mentioned that DeMarcus Lawrence lines up as the left defensive end for the vast majority of his snaps. So Lewis basically said, all right, so now Anai can kind of fill in as the right DN with the Cowboys with Lawrence on the left. So that was just another good example where that's really like the sweet spot of where we're trying to get, right? Taking those numbers, adding them to the video, and now Lewis is able to tell a pretty good story where if you're a Cowboys fan, you understand that pretty clearly, right? That's not something so complex where it's going to go over the casual fan's head.
Yeah, I think you said it really well there, and we are super excited about – we feel like we're just scratching the surface in terms of all that we can do to continue to educate the fans more and provide you guys great information on those college football players. And hopefully we'll have a season this year.
Sports Info Solutions is excited to announce its Football Analytics Challenge. Contestants will use Sports Info Solutions data to determine which defensive line position is the most valuable and how does the value change based on factors like in-game situation. Registration is now open and submissions are due for preliminary judging by Sunday, July 19th. Three finalists will be chosen to present their work live to a panel of judges including Matt Manacharian, Aaron Schatz, and John Park from the Indianapolis Colts front office. In addition to some great exposure within the industry, winner will receive a free one-year subscription to the SIS Data Hub Pro and will be invited to appear on this podcast to discuss their research with Matt and Aaron. And the best part, all proceeds from the event will go to the United Negro College Fund. A minimum $1 donation is required for entry, but we encourage any of our listeners to donate to this worthy cause. For more information and to register today, check out the pinned tweet on the Sports Info Solutions Twitter account. That's @sportsinfo_SIS.
All right, we're running out of time, so I'm going to sign off. I want to thank all of the listeners, and be sure to check out the SIS Football Analytics Challenge for the United Negro College Fund. You can find it through sportsinfosolutions.com or our Twitter @sportsinfo_SIS. It's a great way for the public football analytics community to get their hands on some new and interesting data, including defensive line techniques. And even if you aren't interested in competing, you can donate to a great cause through our GoFundMe page. We've had lots of really good activity there. And Sports Info Solutions even provided a match up to a certain amount of the donations. We're also recruiting for 2020 football video scouts. As we just mentioned, we're expecting the season to go on, and we need people to collect this data. So if you're interested in applying, head to the career section of our website, sportsinfosolutions.com. The Football Outsiders Almanac will be out this month. It is July. Aaron, are we still on pace for a July 15th release?
Yes, and our Kubiak Fantasy Football projections are now posted if you are a member of FO Plus, and you can get FO Plus on an early bird special, $99.99 through the end of the month.
Check out that special. Evan, is there anything you wanted to plug?
Give me a follow on Twitter, EPCAP, EPKAP, and tune in to Sunday Countdown and Monday Night Countdown this fall. We've got a lot of fun things coming up.
I have a feeling that lots of people will be tuning in, and they will have a new and different perspective on it. For my co-host Aaron Schatz, our producer Justin Stein, and our guest Evan Kaplan, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.